Welcome, everyone. This is The LaRouche Show, Saturday, February 7th, 2009. And my name's Marcia Mary Baker. Our topic today is Fire Pelosi, Set Up the PCORA Commission. Now, in reference to firing Pelosi, let me just begin by saying this. It was just a couple days ago that the new president of the United States, Barack Obama, made a point of saying we're in one of the worst financial economic crises in history. And it was a year and a half ago that Lyndon LaRouche, in July 2007, saying the crisis is upon us, here's what we have to do. He spelled it out at that time. He issued resolutions for draft legislation. Many of you listening participated in this campaign for the Homeowners and Bank Protection Act and for follow-on related international emergency measures. And among those in the front lines of stopping this was Nancy Pelosi, the Speaker of the House, who came into office in January 2007 and obstructed it. She's now part of the gang obstructing anything from the new administration. That's what we're dealing with. And in reference to, and this past week, Lyndon LaRouche reissued his call that Nancy Pelosi, the Speaker of the House, her cohort, Barney Frank, the Massachusetts representative who heads the House Financial Services Committee, they should be put out of office. It's a matter of national urgency. And secondly, in reference to setting up the PCORA Commission, that references to the 1932 to 34 early Franklin Delano Roosevelt years, when in the Senate, a commission brought to task some of the major financial interests and personalities of the time who had been acting to undercut and destroy the United States economy, J.P. Morgan, Jack Morgan, and others. And PCORA just simply refers to Ferdinand PCORA, the district attorney from New York City, who was chief counsel or chief person for that very effective hearings that spotlighted who was the responsible, who were the criminals involved. Now, again, this past week, Lyndon LaRouche has reiterated his call he made in September in last year, 2008, that we should have that kind of panel again and go after who's responsible while we put the emergency measures to restore the economy. So that's where we are today to discuss this situation. We're at a break point, and I'm very glad to welcome from the LaRouche Political Action Committee from the LaRouche Youth Movement out in the San Francisco Bay Area, Summer Shields. Welcome, Summer.
Thank you, Marcia. Hello.
And here in the studio, live with me, Nancy Spanis, editor of EIR, whom we haven't had on in a long time. Welcome, Nancy.
Thanks, Marcia.
I know she's been keeping busy, and she'll say something about that in a minute. And my special associate in economics, Paul Gallagher. Welcome, Paul.
Thanks, Marcia.
Now, I'll say right now, I said we're at a break point. People should know that Lyndon LaRouche is going to give an international webcast on the situation. You can send in questions and so forth. He's doing it through his political action committee, LaRouchePAC.com. And that's going to be February 11th. It's this coming Wednesday. It's at 1 o'clock Eastern time.
Hey, Marcia, I have the headline for that webcast.
Okay.
Successfully extracted from the
busy man.
Busy man, yes, who's writing another article for the coming EIR and is mostly involved with that. But he said, call it on the next step. And what he's looking toward is that this stimulus package will be out of the way. It won't do anything, but he says it's kind of what Obama thinks he has to do to get things moving. And then we move on to the next step of what actually must be done immediately in order to prevent us from going down the tubes.
Thanks. And you can see, as I say, I'll just say this, we might repeat it. Look for that on www.larouchepac.com, LaRouchePac.com, 1 o'clock February 11th Eastern Time, and look there on how you can send in questions. You can do it in advance. So what we'd like to do is Summer Shields, as among those in Northern California who organized in Nancy Pelosi's home district in San Francisco. I believe she's represented that area for 20 years or something like that. But a town hall meeting 48 hours ago about the fact that she should be out of office. Is that right, Summer? Could you go into this?
Yeah, that's right. We had a town hall meeting, which was quite successful. I think it's probably one of the most populated meetings we've had, even though we want to double or triple it for our next one. But the it's clear that a lot of people are tired of the woman, if you can call her that, human that is. And she is, among the other things, is well, one of the things you already brought up is that her biggest crime that she'll probably go down for having committed is that she blocked this Homeowners and Bank Protection Act. And as is national headlines, California has a huge budget deficit. It's a projected $41 billion budget deficit by 2011. And the sheer number of people who will die as a result of her rejection of the Homeowners and Bank Protection Act is something that many people don't even quite know yet, her complicity in that. Yet they already are upset because she came in, as we've reported a number of times, she came in with a mandate in 2006. All the Democrats came in, and they got the majority in both houses, and they have failed to take up what they've got to do. So this town hall meeting was lively. We had LaRouche's West Coast representative, Harley Slinger, who came, and he gave a presentation, and afterwards the Q&A was taken up for the whole remainder of the meeting, which was about an hour. And among other things that came up was, how can we get rid of Pelosi, and can we? And what Harley brought up was something interesting, which is that, yes, we can. Scandal has been the nature of the speakers of the House over the last few years. And if you look at the House Majority Leader Tom DeLay, a.k.a. the Hammer, he got hammered by us, and he's gone. So Pelosi can go, and Newt Gingrich, as Harley mentioned, he had a couple of mistresses.
At least, so, I think.
At least. So he can go, and he left, and so she can go too. And it's very possible to get rid of her.
Well, that's great. One thing is, we want to come back to California, what you started with too, which is one of the most in trouble and biggest economies in the world, and get more a picture of that. But Nancy Spanos is going to have to leave at a certain point. So let's go to look a minute at some of the some of those who are actively working to prevent anything effective being done about the economy alongside Pelosi in the media and so forth. And Nancy can update us on some of the networks who are super active in support of preventing any Franklin Delano Roosevelt-style approach to the present day, namely LaRouche's approach.
I think if you look at most of the anti-FDR coverage these days in the U.S. press, and a lot of it in Europe, the touchstone that people are utilizing is a book that was published in mid-2007 by one Amity Schles, we call her the Amityville Horror, whose book I reviewed in September of 2007. One can get that on the website of EIR, which is LaRouchePub.com. This is, in fact, I first became aware of the book because there was a column by George Will citing her as the new authoritative expert that FDR did not beat the Depression. And everyone has to keep this in mind. And the fact that Obama is thinking of trying to follow FDR's lead in dealing with the current financial crisis, just shows that he's misinformed about the fact that it's been proven that FDR did not beat the Depression. Actually, I think there was a previous book about this I went to at a Heritage Foundation event on also, where they use statistics about the unemployment rate and so forth and so on all the way through to indicate that there was no change. You know, which is just a total lie. I mean, you can lie with anything about statistics, but the reality of the fact is that what FDR did do in terms of reasserting the power, dirigist power of the federal government in employing millions of people, in building infrastructure, which is operating to this day to maintain what we have left of our transportation system, urban water system, park system, and so forth, is just to show complete ignorance about what's involved in a real economy. And of course, they're not particularly interested in that, because the major concern of people like Schles, whose pedigree I can go into a bit, is basically to assert that taking the power over the economy out of the hands of private financial interests and putting it into the hands of a sovereign, popularly elected government is the crime, right? Her book, by the way, is called The Forgotten Man, and this is supposed to be a very clever turn of phrase because FDR, of course, campaigned successfully toward his revolution in policy on the concept of bringing the forgotten man at the bottom of the economic pyramid into representation by government again, being protected by government from the cartels, from those powers that were actually stronger than government at the particular, under the previous administration. But she references a book on the forgotten man by one of the arch social Darwinists, or complete free trade lunatics from the 19th century, William Graham Sumner, and says the real forgotten men are those entrepreneurs who put themselves out, who pay the bills, who get taxed. And who are they? Why, they are people like Andrew Mellon. Andrew Mellon! You know, the fact that it's only, I mean, this is the guy who was in the head of the Federal Reserve, right, or head of Treasury?
Treasury. Treasury. Rand Herbert Hoover.
Rand Herbert Hoover through the Treasury Department imposed the kind of total insanity of austerity which drove us into the total depths of the Depression. And she presents him as a victim of the FDR regime. And the fact that she could even think that she could get away with this just tells you about the ignorance of the American population or passivity of the American population at this time.
Yeah, this is Snow is Black. Why don't you give some of her pedigree? Because those are the Nancy Pelosi string pullers, right?
What she represents is a tool of the financial powers that actually Lyndon LaRouche has been stressing in the recent period were effectively running the U.S. financially from the time that Teddy Roosevelt came into office until FDR came into office. I mean, in other words, we did have fascist financiers trying to run the United States and largely dominating the United States in that period, which includes the Mellons most particularly, the Morgans, the DuPonts, basically Anglo-American finance running this operation.
Nancy, let me make a plug here, too, everyone, for EIR News Service, because I know you just edited a new article by John Hoeffel, whose title is The Fascist Versus FDR Then and Now.
Right.
And it has all these names. I think it's already, LaRouche Political Action Committee has posted it.
Right, as a preview. Yeah.
Right.
Yes, that's some of the background of what is actually involved. The particular with Amity Schles is some of these financial bigwigs decided to diversify and go into setting up think tanks. And these are the guys you're hearing about all the time, the Heritage Foundation, the Cato Institute, and so forth. In particular, the one that Amity Schles wrote this book on a fellowship for is the American Enterprise Institute. Now, the American Enterprise Institute I think some people call it the Temple of Doom, because which reflects as much their geopolitical policies as it does their economic policies. But this began, as John points out, as the American Enterprise Association in 1938 in New York City, specifically to oppose the measures of Franklin Delano Roosevelt for the general welfare and against the money changers in the temple, whom he was dedicated to dethroning during his entire regime. So this is where the woman comes from. Now, that's who was funding her for this book in particular. Now, before that, she worked for the Wall Street Journal with some of the wildest monetarists there. She worked for the Financial Times. And she won a prize, actually, which is an honored prize by a group of oligarchs that formed after the war specifically to destroy FDR. This is the Mont Pelerin Society. They established a multitude of little think tanks, you know, a lot of them in London, some of them in the United States, some of them in Switzerland and other places, globally, to try to besmirch, smear, destroy FDR as communist and socialist throughout the entire world. And one of the things that they did to that effect in the United States was reprint a book written in 1848, of all times, by a fellow named Frederick Bastiat. And this guy was a total reactionary.
It was written in Europe?
Feudalist. It was written in France against the wave of revolutions, which were at this time sweeping Europe, in an attempt to bring some kind of republicanism against absolutism. This guy... book, which is a very small book, has been published by one of these Mont Pelerin think tanks in 450,000 copies.
What's the name?
It's called The Law. And its argument is that the law is really free market, right? And anything that you do to interfere with private enterprise, including public education, including income tax,
including public health,
anything
fighting
that you
disease.
Do
mm-hmm.
to fight the natural course of death and destruction, which is carried out by these oligarchs, is against the law. Now, this woman, Amity Schles, won the Frederick Bastiat Prize in her youth, and she's now sits on the board of that awards other Frederick Bastiat prizes. So it's a bland book, right? In fact, it's a stupid, bland book. I think John says in his article, you know, Fala knew more about economics than this woman, Amity Schles. But, and she's very careful to say, well, of course FDR was a great leader to beat Hitler, right? You've got to say that. But economically, he was all wrong. You know, he abused these people like Samuel Insull, like Andrew Mellon, and James Warburg. I mean, she's absolutely in your face in terms of defending those who were fighting tooth and nail against FDR to prevent the benefits of his programs from reaching the entire population. And as LaRouche has pointed out again recently in some of the webcasts, where people are reflecting a brainwashing of the American population on the FDR question, saying, well, he didn't really succeed, did he? You know, he didn't really wipe out unemployment. It took the war. LaRouche has said, look, he was in a war through the entire period of the 12 years that he had actively to work in the government. And these are the people who were fighting tooth and nail day and night to prevent his programs from expanding even more effectively throughout the population.
Right. Well, that gives us an idea who Nancy Pelosi is part of, right?
Right.
So... Well, let's come back again, unless Summer or something has something to add here, including what people are you know, maybe asking at town hall meetings about these kinds of networks. But there are two aspects of things, if we continue on. One thing, how rapidly our context is in which the economy is falling apart, people's lives and the potential production capacity of the country is being destroyed. And secondly, what all, you know, the particular crimes and so forth of Pelosi and the gang. First, let me just ask you, Summer, is it the case that the first week of February is when these forced furloughs come about, where a portion of your state workforce is just not to work a couple days a month?
You know, I don't know the time frame on that.
It did start yesterday.
Oh, okay.
The first one was yesterday.
Wow.
And Paul, let me just ask you, because I know you have an overview of the millions unemployed and so forth and so on, the latest picture that in the across the country.
Well, there are 22 million that are unemployed or underemployed at this point, half of them without any work at all, more than half, nearly 14 million without any work, either supposedly in the labor force or having dropped out of it. That's more like 14-15% of the civilian labor force is unemployed, underemployed, and that's obviously, as everybody can see, growing at a rate of several million every 6 months, you know, a million and a half, 2 million every quarter. So what's been discussed so far, even in terms of, economic investment stimulus, even if it were all job creating, is far behind this. There's 500,000, I think 600,000 jobs projected by various economists working on the stimulus bill in manufacturing, 600,000 jobs in manufacturing to be created over 4 years. So compare that to the rate at which they're being lost. So, you know, I think Lynn has described this, what's being debated furiously now in the Senate and the House, as both too big and too small. It's obviously much too small. It should be, as he said, $1 trillion annually, as far as the eye can see, invested in a capital budget to produce modern infrastructure, produce and to a certain extent refurbish and repair, but above all to produce and fill the vast gaps of things like high-speed railroads, of which there are none, provision of water management and water creation through desalination and through large-scale water works in the west of the continent. These kinds of real job-creating infrastructure, estimated in Mexico, the Plino and Pligon water works plans in the northwest and northeast, 2 million jobs right there, of which would obviously spill across the border because it's the Great American Desert that's being worked on there. That's a real answer to this. On the other hand, the thing is too big because Pelosi and Barney Frank and a few other people put a lot of nonsense into it. We can go into that. This is really the culmination of a series of major blocks and blunders and real treason that Pelosi and Frank and a few others have committed in the course of the last 5 or 6 years.
Yeah. Now, unless Nancy or Summer want to interpose here, I'd like to ask you before the show's over, like maybe now, but to go over the one big block is Pelosi directly on the preventing something being done about converting and retooling what was left of the auto industry capacity, right? A few years ago when LaRouche pointed this out, 2005, let's make this the front end of upgrading and retooling the manufacturing base of the country. Could you just summarize that?
Well, just quickly, I mean, there are three outright acts of treason here, which when you look back on them, it's absolutely clear that the whole political and economic situation would be totally different if it were not for her sabotage. Number one, impeaching Cheney. She wouldn't allow it. She wouldn't allow it even to be considered or on the table of any committee in the House.
Yeah, can you in fact, she had an excuse, right? We'll re-elect someone after the election. I mean, she just blocked it.
We don't want to be seen to be, threatening trials, and therefore we won't win the... It was nonsense. She simply protected him. She blocked the thing for 4 years after Lynn called for, and there was widespread support, obviously, for impeaching Cheney. Second, the 2005-2006 mobilization that we conducted with literally thousands of leaders of the auto union from various locals around the country to retool what is now almost entirely closed down auto and auto supply and auto systems capacity, all those machine tools, 80 million square feet, to assume those under a federal corporation like the Defense Plants Corporation, and use them for retooling for a broad range of infrastructure, the elements of infrastructure, the factory elements of infrastructure, and use them even for certain crucial military needs, like producing all the armor that couldn't be produced for the Humvees and the new vehicles, which were the MRAP vehicles, all of that. That was universally discussed throughout the Congress. Pelosi and her friend, the New York fascist banker Felix Roatan, personally did the waterfront, did the rounds, told congressmen no on this. They had a little bit of support from some of the idiotic GM and other management, who gave them the line that LaRouche was proposing nationalization of the auto. So they used that. The effects of that, everybody now knows in spades. The auto companies are gone. LaRouche said they can't come back, they can't survive by selling cars. Now they're selling cars at 600,000 or so a month. I mean, that's less than half of the rate of 3 or 4 years ago. She blocked that. Then came the HBPA, for which we are still fighting, but which has been done incredible damage by the sabotage of Pelosi in early 2007 and Barney Frank in 2008, of saying that this, again, this was nationalization. They spread the word. George Soros, we know, worked with them on this because he personally telephoned at least several congressmen, at least one of whom was considering introducing the bill, told them that we were proposing to seize the banks. Well, we've seen enough of that since then, and have fought against it. But she blocked that, and instead what Barney Frank came up with to block the HBPA was, and here we get to Amity Schles and the Council on Foreign Relations, was something called the, I'm forgetting, the name changed so many times. It was passed in July of 2008. At one time it was called the Fair Housing.
Oh, right. It had the Hope for Homeowners.
Hope for Homeowners was one of the terms. It's got a million names.
Right.
Everybody knew what it was because the word spread out from Congress that, oh, we're not going to do LaRouche's HBPA, that's seizing the banks or something. We're going to do a new version of Franklin Roosevelt's Homeowner Loan Corporation. Mm-hmm. And this is being put into legislative form by Barney Frank and Christopher Dodd in the Senate. And who wrote the columns which first proposed this as a new version of Franklin Roosevelt's Homeowner Loan Corporation?
Amityville Schles.
Ben Steele of the Council on Foreign Relations and Amity Schles of the Council on Foreign Relations. So they played both sides. They began the circulation of this, and they faked it as redoing a fundamental legislative act of FDR, by which the foreclosure, mass foreclosure crisis of the 30s was ended by FDR effectively. Now, we've seen that bill's been in effect for 7 months now, and the total number, with a $300 billion authorization for this, the total number of mortgages which have been renegotiated by it is 25 for that $300 billion authorization. It has been a total chaotic failure and has allowed the seizure of homes in the country by foreclosure now, not just notices, but seizure of homes, has now reached 4,000 a day around the country. It's a completely chaotic situation in which on the one hand, the investors in the mortgage-backed securities are blocking any renegotiation of the mortgages, are defying this law, rendering it completely ineffective. And on the other hand, the vast number of foreclosures are driving down the prices of all homes and therefore driving the value of the remaining mortgage-backed securities to zero.
Right.
So it's a wonderful chaotic
self-feeding
spiral that Nancy Pelosi and Barney Frank and Christopher Dodd substituted in place of the HBPA of LaRouche. Had the HBPA been passed a year or a year and a half ago, there would have been no bank bailouts of $700 billion or $2 trillion by the Fed. There would have been no 4,000 homes being seized every day in the country, and you would have a much greater chance of putting the banks through a relatively successful bankruptcy reorganization, because you wouldn't have this chaotic collapse in all these values going on. So those are the things that Pelosi did, and in the case of Barney Frank's legislation was really the worst treason, because it went directly with the enemies of FDR, producing a dummy FDR piece of legislation. And I know, because I was involved in so many of these meetings, this was believed around the Congress among all of the congressional offices, all the congressmen who wanted to do something about foreclosures. This was believed that this was a new version of FDR's Homeowner Loan Act of 1934. And they were completely duped, treasonously duped by Pelosi and Frank in that, and that, aside from her support of drugs of every kind and complete leftist environmentalism, they really justify getting her out of there right away.
Well, let's add one thing, because this is very powerful. Summer, I hope we're still connected okay on the in the telephone connection there. But on this drug record of Pelosi, I mean, that is pro-drug use, decriminalization of narcotics. I think it's very impressive. This was little known to me, but I don't know everything, that over the last 20-some years, in California in particular, and for the country, she wants marijuana, she wants other drug decriminalization, exactly George Soros's program of the kind of neo-British empire of today. What do you see out there in California?
Well, she definitely is pro-drug, and it's in a way it appeals to a lot of the culture out here in a certain way. But I think that the sheer amount of hatred that people have for what she's already done, and the anger, frustration that the population's got, will overpower any of that. And I also think that there's a lot of people who are anti-drug increasingly. This is just because they see what the result has been on a city like San Francisco.
Yeah, we really have to confront that culture, right, which has permitted this to occur. And, of course, this is another one of the areas where she's hand in glove with Barney, because he was also with her a funder of a national bill on this harm reduction medical marijuana operation a few years ago, and which was defeated and which is not supported by the Obama administration from everything that we can tell. The incoming Attorney General, Eric Holder, was heavily opposed by the Soros networks because he was very tough in going after any of these foot in the door for drug legalization operations. The fact is, as Eric Nadelman, one of the top spokesmen for Soros for the drug lobby in the United States, said this last week, it's just terrible. People like Charlie Rangel and others, are totally retrograde when it comes to drugs, which means that they've seen how it's destroyed the black community and destroys minds and want to stop it. Whereas Nancy Pelosi, she gets it. She's on the modern wave of actually allowing the British financial oligarchy to destroy the minds and dumb down the minds of people in the United States.
Yeah, I'll tell you, her record has been, it might be on the LaRouche Political Action Committee website on this. I know it's going into the Executive Intelligence Review online that'll be out at the first of the week. For example, this bill you mentioned, Nancy, is June 1997. Barney Frank and Nancy Pelosi. It's called the Medical Use of Marijuana Act.
Right.
And there's each year there's another action by her. 2001, a bill called States' Rights to Medical Marijuana Act, that in case the federal government can't, that they can be overruled.
To try to prevent the federal government from carrying out its mandate against mind-destroying drugs. Yeah.
And each year there's another 25-30% increase in marijuana growing in California. Supposedly, all these people, I'm growing it for medical reasons.
Yeah, right.
So, there must be an awful lot of sick people out there if this is the case.
Right. Well, let me ask again, Summer, you said you have more in the works following on this town hall meeting and so forth. We'll also say goodbye and thank Nancy Spanis for joining us.
Okay, now. Yeah. Okay. I've seen you. Good to be here. Bye.
Do you want to, what's in the works, or what do some of the dozens of people participating, what do you think is going to be up next with them to really help make this happen, getting her out of office?
Well, we have a bit of a two-front battle, which is we have a governor who's caused quite a bit of trouble, and people are dissatisfied with him. And LaRouche just recently commented at his January 22nd webcast in response to a question from a state legislator here, that former state legislator, that is, that the least we could do in the state of California is go ahead with the recall of the governor. And that is something that different people are looking at. We're seeing how to get something done on a very large scale, because it would require, once it got started, about 4,500 signatures daily in order to get to the point where we could have a recall of him. But that combined with Nancy Pelosi, we've got essentially all of our, whatever we do is going to be oriented around, and mainly it's going to be Pelosi right now, but until we get something official on this recall, on any sort of move towards something like that, if we were going to do that. But on Pelosi, it's very clear that we're getting a lot of people who are responding in total support of us going after Pelosi. And one of the cool things that the Obama administration has done is they have this MyBarackObama.com website, and they've got a number of different events that are posted by just about everybody, supporters more or less, supporters of what Obama's doing, but people who want to see Obama do something worthwhile, they'll post events up on this website, and we've been going and engaging in discussions with people. And we went to four or five last night, and we brought up removing Pelosi at all of them. And the one I was at, I took part in, immediately the whole discussion turned to getting rid of Pelosi, and that led to how Harry Reid is a coward. And there's a whole discussion about this taking place inside of this room, and then it flared down a little bit, and then shortly later in the discussion it flared up again, and everyone was talking about getting rid of Nancy Pelosi again. So people are ready for that kind of move, but how to do it is something that is something we've got to get across, how to organize to a lot of these people.
Right. Is there one pattern or one impulse or reflex, or I suppose you could say, even if it's just a couple meetings you've been at, that tends to come to the fore, whether it's Cheney, or if it's not drugs as such in California, but Cheney could, or the economy, basically, or anything else?
The main thing that came up in this is that, and we luckily we had this article that just came out in Time Magazine, which is another forecast of LaRouche filled, is this article by Time Magazine called Obama versus Pelosi, Can the President Work with the Democrats? He's got a very unflattering picture of Pelosi, which none of them really are. But a lot of people are upset because she's blocking what Obama could otherwise be doing, and that's very clear. One woman there was very adamant about how there were a few people who were saying, well, Obama's got to stand up for himself. He's got to stand up for himself against Pelosi. Well, it's very clear that people know she's blocking anything meaningful from coming out of the administration right now.
Right. Let me ask Paul, do you mind recapping? I mean, there's certain kinds of skirmishing in Congress against Pelosi. It's not that it's all heavyweight or something, but could you summarize that?
Well, it is. It isn't heavyweight, and it is skirmishing. It's taken the form of a spreading revolt, a letter, which is now maybe 60, 65 members of the Democratic members of the House, including a few subcommittee chairmen, have signed this thing, which is addressed to Steny Hoyer, who's her majority leader, and says that she has shunted aside all the deliberative processes of the House in a series beginning with the emergency bailouts demanded by Hank Paulson in the Bush administration in July of 07 when they nationalized Fannie and Freddie and seized them in September of 07 with the $700 billion TARP monstrosity, again with the stimulus, right, cutting off, applying emergency rules and not allowing what they call regular order of discussion and consideration of bills. So there's a revolt. 60 Democrats is a quarter of the caucus, which has signed this, and it's including increasingly more important in terms of their positions, Democrats. That she's had to respond to that in various rhetorical ways. But this is small stuff around. It's like the picking up Al Capone on a parking ticket.
Yeah,
this is small stuff, but it definitely is a recognition that she has gummed up the works of Obama. And, obviously Obama is much happier with what he's able to organize in the Senate, even around this stimulus bill, than what came out of the House. And she is really blocking him, in addition to being opposed to him on drugs, and drug policy, and opposed to him on a number of other things. She's blocking what he's clearly saying has got to be done. It's got to be done right away. We're in an economic catastrophe, as he said. And she's put in the bill a little earmark for American Samoa sweatshops of Del Monte, which her husband is a big stockholder in. It's just sort of iconic for all the ways in which this thing was messed up by her. She's from the beginning told the president he can't go and speak to any member of the Democratic caucus in the House without clearing it with her first. I mean, this is the kind of thing that Pelosi's been doing. But, this is feeding the fire from what were real acts of treason that I was discussing before.
Yeah, let's bring in the question of PCORA Commission here. As I mentioned, LaRouche called for, let's throw the spotlight on the real evil ones pulling Nancy Pelosi's strings and so forth. But before we do that, you mentioned sleaze factors, like throwing stuff in the stimulus that then you look and she's associated with some of it. Do notice that the famous windbag T. Boone Pickens, Pelosi in 2007 in May invested in one of T. Boone Pickens in Texas firms that had to do with wind power or had to do with use of natural gas supposedly to save the environment. And part of what T. Boone Pickens is involved in is if you make some of this so-called alternative energy out of wind power, you have to connect it to the grid, and he wants the government to pay for connecting this kind of so-called renewable energy to the national grid. So in the stimulus, it's called the smart grid, and you'd have a couple of gerbil power connections, and then the rest of the time you'd have Pelosi, T. Boone Pickens wind power. So that's so much for the sleaze, but if anyone wants to add any more, okay. But now the big evil names, Felix Rohatyn and others, George Soros. Let me just tell Summer and Paul, I don't know if you've noticed, I just see in the wires today that Felix Rohatyn, who's the real fascist economist, pedigree banker, continuity going back to the kind of Nazis that attacked Franklin Delano Roosevelt. He has a new book coming out February 24 by Simon & Schuster. It has a name something like How We Build America and How We Must Build Now, The Big Endeavor, or mm-hmm. something like that. And it has a picture of heavy-duty worker riveter on the front cover, just in the futuristic art like Mussolini. So it'll be, you know, apparently it's 10 episodes of what we once did in America and how we're going to build today. But it's complete Mussolini economics, hardly covered up. So the point is, Paul, if you just recap what LaRouche is referring to by having a new kind of panel, a new PCORA commission to take to task these types of people that are doing this, or pull the threads on any of the fraud, any of the sleaze, any of the Madoff scandal Ponzi schemes, and this is who you get. What was it in the 30s?
Well, I just should note that Lyndon LaRouche, early December, I think it was the 11th, he put out a statement, his characteristic bluntness going right to the point of how can the new president get the mobilized support in order to take on Wall Street and start a recovery right away and a bankruptcy reorganization of the banks. This was obviously more than a month before Obama took office. He said Congress has to call a new PCORA commission. Now that means the Senate Banking Committee, which in 1932 through 1934 had a series of hearings not overseen by windbag committee chairman like Christopher Dodd is now, but rather overseen by a New York prosecutor, a tough guy named Ferdinand PCORA, who also was an extraordinarily good legal researcher and learned very, very rapidly what the Madoff scandals of that day, the J.P. Morgans and the Mitchells of Chase Manhattan and so forth were up to. And he put them all on the stand, and he forced them to admit, basically, where'd you get your money? Well, more exactly, how did you manufacture that money, which has now disappeared on the rest of us? And by the time his hearings were even into the early part of 33, he was collaborating. He was meeting with Franklin Roosevelt, President-elect Roosevelt, not yet in office. PCORA was. And he was coordinating. And it was Roosevelt who suggested to him get Morgan on the stand, which happened in early May of 1933. And by the time Morgan got off the stand, the American people were absolutely in an uproar over these Wall Street bankers. They were calling them banksters, which I think Time magazine invented that term at that time. And the Congress was brought into session by FDR and kept in session for the famous 100 days under the impact of that mobilized and informed outrage, and they passed all this legislation, including the SEC and the Securities Acts and the Banking Reform Acts, and including the Bank Reorganization Act. So that's what LaRouche meant. And I've been involved in doing a lot of meetings with members of Congress on this. This has really struck a chord among people who we're at the same time fighting with them over the Homeowners and Bank Protection Act. That's a harder fight right now because they saw that sabotage. They all knew that was last year. And we, Pelosi, Frank, decided not to do that, right? So it's a harder fight because we're trying to mobilize constituency pressure now from all the states and all the cities which have endorsed our legislation to get this back on the plate of Congress because they resist it and they think that, you know, that was something we considered and didn't do last year and instead we went this other bailout route and even though it's failed, it's hard to go back for them. But the PCORA Commission, they got. We had spoken to potential new modern-day PCORAs and we knew that they were ready, any one of them, to step into that role. So this went around, and on Wednesday of this week, the ranking Republican on the Senate Banking Committee, same committee which has got to do it, Richard Shelby of Alabama, gave a long exposition in opening a hearing with Paul Volcker as the witness. He essentially started by saying, this is the wrong hearing at the wrong time. We can't talk about a new regulatory framework. We've got to talk about who did what to whom. And then he said, let's hold hearings like the PCORA hearings. He went through the history of the PCORA hearings as they had come out in various publications, the Times, the Nation, I think in the last couple of days, the Washington Post, after LaRouche's call, various commentators and historians picked it up. Shelby went through all that, and then he said, first let's call all the regulators and get all their records at the same time, ask them what they were doing, and at the same time research what they were doing or not doing, and then let's call all the CEOs of all the leading banks and financial institutions in the country, and at the same time research what they were doing. Let's get a big staff, and let's really go after this. And he turned to the chairman of the committee, Christopher Dodd, the same Dodd, Artful Dodd, as we call him.
Artful daughter.
Said, Mr. Chairman, I'm ready to hold this hearing with you right away. You should have seen Dodd's reaction. It was interesting to watch in person or on video.
I believe he said, maybe we could have a special commission somewhere else.
Well, what Dodd referred to was what Shelby had already rejected in his statement, and LaRouche had rejected several weeks earlier as a waste of time, which was a proposal from several senators a couple of weeks ago to have a 9/11 commission on the financial crash, you know, which would take a good year, year and a half to come up with anything, and then deliver a report. Lynn LaRouche immediately said, that's a waste of time. That's what Dodd tried to throw out, but the pressure is on because it's really right at the heart. It's in the committee, in the leadership of the committee, which has to hold it. And we really have to go all out on this now because this can happen and this can reverse the problem that Obama is experiencing. You know, the joke is Obama's made one big mistake so far, only one, and that is that he's closed Guantanamo before we could try the Wall Street bankers and put them in there. And that really does express his the situation, the strategic impulse that he needs right now.
Well, one thing, Paul, you and Summer might say more about it or not in the closing minutes here, but you do have this being picked up on the state and local level. You mentioned Alabama, that's Senator Shelby's state. But on the Democratic Party side, we've had Representative Tom Jackson, who's a longtime member of the state legislature, and he's been taking the point and saying this LaRouche call for a PCOR commission is exactly what we ought to do. He's issued statements or resolutions. We hope to have him on today, but that couldn't happen but sometime in the coming weeks. And Summer, I don't know, do you find that this question of there are criminals, they're knowable, we could call them to task, strikes a chord in any of these meetings you're going to or holding or organizing either on campus or on, you know, on the streets?
Yeah, everyone knows about everyone is interested in investigating these guys. And we had one meeting in Sacramento, and as soon as we walked into the office, it was one of these guys who was really excited to see us. He's an aide to a senator, a state senator in California. And he sat down and he was just like, I love you guys. I love you guys. And then he sat down, he started talking to us, and then immediately we started talking about the PCOR Commission. And he looked at us and he got real close and started whispering. And he said, yeah, well, you know, I agree with you guys. I'm with you on this, but do you really think this is going to happen? And we kind of joked around with him and said, well, let's pretend like we're in an economic crisis that's going to get drastically worse this year. And he laughed and he said, yeah, that's true. But he said that office would be behind a PCORA-style commission. The meetings we attended yesterday, a bunch of people were for it, and regularly everyone would be for an investigation. It's just whether or not they think it's possible. Now even that's changed with this move with Shelby in Alabama.
Right. Well,
And when these people, like Senator Jackson did from Alabama, when they issue letters like that, calls on Congress, that then gets us in to see those congressmen and discuss this in detail. That's the way, same thing with the HBPA. That's the way it's got to be mobilized.
The maximum heat, yeah. And yeah. Let me make a pitch here again. I should repeat two things before we get, because in the final few seconds, is people should do two things. I'll say three, because I'll say give resources. Make sure you're subscribed to EIR Online. Make sure you're following by the hour the LaRouche Political Action Committee initiatives and backing the LaRouche Youth Movement. If you're listening other than on the follow-up radio message, or excuse me, telephone message line, you know we're on LaRouchePub.com. And you can for sure phone anytime. Let me just give the phone number of the EIR online. It's 1-800-278-3135. It's 1-800-278-3135. But the second thing is, LaRouche himself will have this webcast on February 11th. That's this coming Wednesday. It will be 1 in the afternoon Eastern time. And he has said he's going to be addressing, well, he's calling it On the Next Step. On the Next Step from everything we're describing. And so make sure you know that's on the Political Action Committee site of his, which is www.larouchepac.com. And the third thing is give resources and make sure you're connected. So in the closing few minutes, I just want to say one thing. On the Paul, and then to Summer, but Paul, LaRouche put out, again, I think you were involved in conferring on this, the Homeowners and Bank Protection Act. Could you just say something about that? It's on the LaRouche Political Action Committee website this week.
He just wanted essentially a new issue of it, which in which a very simple introduction in place of the previous motivation introduction of the bill, which had gotten it passed by so many city councils and half a dozen state legislatures.
150 city councils?
150 city councils, six state legislatures. There's another six considering it right now, including Indiana, both Carolinas, three other states.
Florida, Alabama,
yeah.
I think. Yeah, right.
But the he wanted it, you know, those things are well established now. So he wanted it introduced instead now with a very simple and hard-hitting introductory paragraphs which say if Congress, if Nancy Pelosi and Barney Frank, the leadership of Congress, had not sabotaged this initiative, this legislative initiative, the masses of foreclosures, the financial collapse, the bailing out of banks, failed attempts to bail out banks since then would not have occurred. And this crisis would be amenable to government action rather than in complete chaos the way it is now. And that's the way that, and he wanted it to be clear that this was the Homeowner and Bank Protection Act of 2007, which now was 2 years overdue, 18 months plus, overdue in being passed, and what the consequences were of the blocking of this by Frank and Dodd and Pelosi above all, and Felix Roatan and George Soros in the part that he played.
Right, and the thing is, the nation is at stake. I'm saying this just to say a paper by Lyndon LaRouche backing all of this, leading all of this fight, is now available on the LaRouche Political Action Committee website. It's called What is a Nation? Nations as Dynamical. In other words, this is not a given. You can't accept that survival is a given. And this is something I think everyone should have as must reading. So let me just ask you, Summer, in this regard, on the Homeowners and Bank Protection Act, I know in the last 18 months in different parts of California, you've had a slugging match with different local localities, governments, and different levels to bring the constituency pressure that we order Congress what they ought to do. But what do you want to... You're continuing that, I presume, and also the question of, among students or others about conceptualizing what is an economy instead of taking anything for granted. Is that something that would that characterize some of your organizing?
Yeah, we got one thing to note at the town hall meeting. About half of the people who attended were young people who mm-hmm. came in, and they're actively asking questions of Harley at the town hall meeting. And we are beginning, this week we're going to have a whole move in the direction of revitalizing the HBPA mobilization now that we have a new HBPA. And it'll be interesting to see how people respond now, sometime after things have gotten so much worse, because many of them decided not to go with the HBPA in California, largely because you've got this Schwarzenegger, Nancy Pelosi grouping being run by George Shultz and Felix Rohatyn, and now we can see how they respond this time.
Yeah, you're pretty, you're on the hot seat out there. No one isn't, right?
Yeah.
But maybe you are special. Is that what you're saying?
I think so. Very hot in California.
Right. And speaking of which, though, you know, again, thinking of this Felix Rohatyn Mussolini double talk book that's coming out February 24th, is it the case, Summer, that in your whole Delta area or that San Francisco Bay Area, you've had a drought for several years? I mean, do people perceive that we ought to have more infrastructure, or what's it like?
I think it's becoming more clear. If you just drive up the coast, you'll see that they stop watering the grass at these rest stops because they're trying to conserve water. And people know, people definitely know, there's signs everywhere that say conserve water, but people haven't yet started dehydrating yet, I know of.
You mean personally?
Personally.
Right, they're still paying Felix Rohatyn's international investments in bottling companies for privatized water, right?
Yeah, right.
Okay, well, do you want to say anything in closing? Otherwise, I mean, it's amazing the hour has slipped. No?
No, nothing specific.
I want to thank you, Summer Shields from the San Francisco Bay Area, LaRouche Political Action Committee, LaRouche Youth Movement. Thank you very much, Paul Gallagher, for being on again here in the studio.
Thank you.
This is February 7th, 2009. Again, stay tuned for February 14th, Valentine's Day. And also, by the way, one final email. Someone said, did FDR declare a bank holiday as his first action? I think
yes.
So, Paul.
Yes.
And it says, how much time does the Obama presidency have to take effective action?
Hard to tell. He should have already done it. But as soon as he does it, everything else is going to be on a fast track.
Okay. Thanks, Rudy. That's the last email. This is February 7th, the LaRouche Show, and February 11th at 1 o'clock on LaRouchePack.com. Hear LaRouche and send your questions. Thank you very much, Summer and Paul. Bye-bye.
Thank you.